It's time for Area Voices. In this segment, I speak with a Bemidji author whose life has taken her from her childhood in northern Minnesota near Bagley out to sunny California, where she worked in marketing and publicity for television and radio shows. And now in retirement, she's back in northern Minnesota, where she's written and published two books and is working on her third.
I was one of those, in quotes, young authors to be. I had rheumatic fever when I was 10 years old, and I was actually hospitalized for about 6 months. During that time, I had no television, I had no phone, I had no radio. I was pretty much, isolated. I actually had my bed by the window in downtown Bagley, there at the Bagley Hospital. And I'd look out the window, I'd see people walking down the street. I'd make up dialogue for them, I'd describe them, I'd give them names, and I would write about their day and make little notes. It wasn't like a book or anything, it was just little jottings that gave me something to live for, I guess. The writing really didn't become a serious effort for me until I joined a radio station in San Francisco, and my job was public relations, so I had to start writing about the songs, the DJs, writing press releases, and becoming a certain kind of writer of factual information, but making it entertaining.
Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and the history stories of northern Minnesota. Today I'm talking with Bemidji-based writer Joanna Diamond. Joanna has recently published her second book, Howling, Yowling, Growling, with the Lost River Wolf Pack. Tell us about it.
Hearing on the radio, maybe when I was in my car, the Minnesota wolves came off the endangered species list, and now we'll be putting into effect a hunting season on them. It mentioned that the DNR report was that there were 2,000 wolves in Minnesota, and I couldn't make heads or tails, I guess is a good phrase here. Being the kind of person who loves to learn, and I took up the wolf as a research project. I read a lot of books about wolves. I looked at a lot of videos, and I read about the wolf in the past. At one time, there were 2 million wolves in the known world. They've certainly diminished from those days. I decided it sure would be wonderful if I could translate or transfer in a book form, after all that I had read, all the films and the documentaries. What did I get from all of that? I got the fact that a wolf is a very loving, sociable creature. They're extremely smart. Their brain is bigger than people's.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And they have, they're very much like humans in that they have cooperative living. They live in communities. They probably don't have more than, say, 11, depending on the kind of natural habitat they're in. But 11 is about the top that they have. And of this 11, it's a hierarchy. Every wolf knows their job, and they work together. They have this village, or so to speak, in quotes again, and they all take care of the pups. There might be 10 wolves, baby pups, but usually only 4 to 6 survive. But when they come out of the den after a month, the whole pack takes care of them. They lick them all over. They welcome them into the pack, and they babysit them. If the mother has to go on a hunt, there's always wolves back in the pack who take care of the little pups. And the little pups are just adored.
That's Joanna Diamond. Her creatively educational book, Howling, Yowling, Growling, with the Lost River Wolf Pack, puts her research in story form for kids.
The book does situate immediately the characters. Kohanamoku is the silver alpha, and he is known for and admired for his bravery. So he's the top of the pack, and he keeps order. And then I've brought in another character named Bonga. He's named after a black fur trader that came into Minnesota in the 19th century.
Yeah. And George Bonga.
And Bonga is second in command. Then we have Censor. He's the Omega wolf, and he's the most kind-hearted of all wolves. He can't go on a wolf hunt. He's just not up to it. He does babysit the most, and he's kind of a court jester. They make fun of him. They bite his ears, and he goes along with all of it. Now, Shuggy, I have created a wolf named Shuggy. He's pretty much modeled on Ferdinand the Bull. And then we have Argon. Argon is a traumatized wolf because he becomes a lone wolf when he loses his family to a hunter. And he has to go out and make his way in the woods. He's all alone. It's hard for him to hunt. He has to rely on catching the secondary food supply, which is gophers, it's birds, it's squirrels. They eat smaller animals. He has found himself in a position of being almost threatened by other packs because a lone wolf is a rogue wolf, and a rogue wolf is the one usually that attacks animals that might be not being tended.
You know, you talked earlier about looking out the hospital window and creating these stories about these people. And
Right. You've
done that now with the wolves.
Oh, that's so true.
Let's talk a little bit about this wolf pack. They encounter things that wolves would encounter. Aerial hunting, pipelines, a farmer,
traps.
A trapper.
Mm-hmm.
How do you hope the book and these stories of these wolves affect the kids? You take this whole experience to the schools.
Yes, yes. I bring along a theater, a little small theater group called My Wolf Readers. These are friends of mine that love wolves that wear custom-made wolf masks. So they all look like wolves. And they read from the book and enact it and entertain the children in a theater kind of way. And then we ask questions after every episode. And the children have asked the greatest questions. When I was at Thief River, I had the children write essays based on the book, and I based on a small film I have, which is about 10 minutes long, and the film shows the wolves playing together, nipping each other, rubbing noses, and it shows wolves of all colors and sizes, which there is a very diversity of color and shape. So the children all in the Thief River breakout sessions. There were 400 children there in all, and I think I had around 60 in each breakout. And in Thief River, they had all their paper and pencils out. Each one chose a different wolf. They named it. They wrote an essay about the wolf, and I had a microphone and a whole big system there, screens, so they read their essays. There was one that I thought, oh my gosh, this breaks my heart. The little girl, I think she's from a town called Lancaster, up near the border. She wrote about a lone wolf. And I don't know how she knew all that. It was just from her heart.
Yeah.
And how he felt being a lone wolf.
Like she related to the lone wolf type of thing.
Yeah, she did.
These characters, even though they're wolves, are so relatable.
They mm-hmm. are. My book is a wolf-friendly book, and it gives you an idea of what the wolves go through, and it gives them their dignity and their part in nature that yeah. they play. They live a life really far from people. They're very shy.
Would you want to read an excerpt from your book?
I would.
And could you set it up?
I'm going to read an episode that deals with Censor. And Censor is the Omega wolf. He's one that is very kind-hearted, and wolves play with him. And they aren't always nice to him. He takes a lot.
You've done so much research on wolves. Is that typical in how a pack is set up?
Yes, I mean, it is.
Is that kind of...
it's true to form. It never deviates. They always revert to their hierarchy. Oh, here we go. And this is an episode from Censor. Censor, get up. We have to move, said Melon. And be sure you stay behind me. They headed out and were soon crossing a meadow near an open field. They stopped when they came across some big objects sitting around made of steel. Oh, what is this? Asked Bonka. He'd never seen anything like it before. Well, I've seen one of these things before, said Kahanamoku, when they put in that big road about 2 years ago. As they moved along, they could see a gigantic ditch, obviously dug out in the last few days, as dirt and gravel lay piled up alongside. Malon moved up closer. Come here, he said. It looks like they plan to fill it with something. And it was then that their attention centered on a long, shimmering pipe that lay a few feet away from the ditch. Little did they know, they were looking at an oil pipeline, one of man's greatest accomplishments, and also one of man's greatest sources of destruction. It was at this moment that Sensor, joking and playing around, decided to jump into the ditch to see what was in there. Oh, no, no, commanded Kahanamoku. Stop him. But he was too late. Sensor slid down the rest of the way, down to the bottom. He started to howl because he couldn't get up the slippery sides of the ditch. The other three wolves stared down at him with great concern. They knew that when the sun came up, humans would surely be around to use their machines.
That's Joanna Diamond reading from her book, Howling, Yowling, Growling with the Lost River Wolf Pack. To find out what happened to Sensor and the rest of his pack, you'll have to pick up the book. It's available at gift shops and bookstores and grocery stores across northern Minnesota. I'm Katie Carter. You're listening to Area Voices on Northern Community Radio. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the people of Minnesota.